Good evening. I'd like to welcome you to the Oro Valley Town Council regular session, October 7th, 2020 online Zoom meeting. Mr. Standish, roll call, please.
Vice Mayor Barrett?
Here.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy?
Here.
Councilmember Nicholson? Councilmember Pena?
Here.
Councilmember Rodman?
Here.
Councilmember Solomon?
Here.
And Mayor Winfield?
Here. Thank you, Mr. Standish. I'd like to ask that the flag video be presented, and I invite Vice Mayor Barrett if she would lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Yes, thank you. All right. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and for the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Mr. Standish, upcoming meetings.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Water Utility Commission will be holding their regular session on October 12th at 5 p.m. via Zoom. The Planning and Zoning Commission will be holding a special session on October 13th at 6 p.m. via Zoom. The October 15th Stormwater Utility Commission meeting has been canceled. The Budget and Finance Commission will hold a regular session on October 20th at 4 p.m. via Zoom. Then the Parks and Recreation Advisory Board will hold their regular session on October 20th at 6 p.m. via Zoom. And then the next Town Council regular session will be October 21st at 6 p.m. via Zoom. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Are there any council reports this evening?
Mr. Mayor.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
Yes, thank you. I just wanted to take an opportunity to express my thanks and appreciation to the Conservation Fund for all the work that they have put in and the financial effort that they've put in working with our community. I think most of us are aware at this point that the contract between the Conservation Fund and ROMSPN wasn't finalized, and that ROMSPN has suspended their general plan amendment application at the moment. But I just felt like it would be appropriate for me to take a moment to just express my appreciation to them. They came into Oro Valley. They've worked with our citizens. They've done put quite a bit of effort into this property with the town, and I'm very appreciative of that.
Thank you. Any additional council reports? Hearing none, we'll go to Ms. Jacobs for her town manager's report.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So I just have one item that I wanted to bring to the council's attention this evening and our community's attention. As you know, 2 weeks ago, we honored a number of our employees and departments for their outstanding work and some awards that were bestowed upon this organization. And just a couple of days after the last meeting, we received word that the town, for the 26th consecutive year in a row, received the Certificate of Achievement for Excellence in Financial Reporting from the Government Finance Officers Association. And we also received the Excellence in Procurement Award, our 13th year in a row, by the National Institute for Public Procurement. So I would like to just take a moment to thank our outstanding staff for the work that they do in helping to manage our administrative, our finances and our contracts every day, and just to recognize them for their outstanding work. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Jacobs. We appreciate that report. The agenda will remain as posted. I'd like to thank everyone for joining us this evening. This meeting is taking place online to comply with ongoing social distancing requirements and ensure the community's ability to participate. In order to participate, one must be logged into Zoom directly by computer or telephone. For those who are unfamiliar with the Zoom software, I'd like to provide a quick overview on how you can participate this evening. Everyone's microphone, except for the individual that has the floor will be muted throughout the meeting to ensure as smooth and efficient meeting as possible. Only select staff can turn on your microphone at the appropriate time if you would like to provide comments. I will do my best to let everyone know when it is appropriate to raise your hand for a particular agenda item. If you wish to address the council on any agenda item or during the call to audience, please raise your hand only when I announce it's appropriate to do so. There are two ways to do this. For those participating on any platform other than by phone, find and select the participant's icon. This will open a dialog box that lists all participants in the meeting. Scroll down until you find your name and select your name. Once your name is selected, a second box will pop up where you'll have the option to raise your hand. For those participating via phone, press *9 to raise your hand. Please wait to raise your hand until the appropriate agenda item has been announced, and after I announce the opportunity to do so. Otherwise, we will not be able to discern which topic that you wish to address in relation to the agenda. Our aim this evening is to proceed in a timely and efficient manner. Once your hand is raised, staff will be alerted to your request to speak. So please raise your hand if you would like to make a comment after I announce the appropriate time to do so. At the appropriate time, I will call on those with their hands raised to provide comments. I will then announce your name and staff will unmute your access so you can speak. Please make sure you're not also muted on your personal device. Please review the meeting agenda so you know the item on which you would like to speak. Please don't raise your hand until we have made it to that item on the agenda. As with all town council meetings, please clearly state your name and whether or not you are a resident of Oro Valley. Also, speakers are limited to no more than 3 minutes. A timer will be used as with in-person meetings, and we ask that you please respect the 3-minute limit. There are no informational items this evening, so we are at the next agenda item is call to audience. I have been alerted by the town clerk that there are some of you this evening that would like to speak during call to audience. And so I encourage you to do that. Let me just say that for those who wish to speak tonight regarding the proposed westward look annexation at call to the audience, which is now, I want to remind our audience tonight that we have a rule that states under the general public comment that you cannot speak about anything on tonight's agenda. The item regarding the westward look on tonight's consent agenda is an administrative item for the town council to initiate the general plan amendment and rezoning applications for the westward look resort, since the property is not in town limits, in the town limits. Therefore, if you plan to speak on this topic, and we certainly encourage you to do so, and you don't want to be interrupted by the town's attorney, I want to remind you not to address, and this is the key, to address the initiation of the general plan amendment or rezoning. Again, this is an administrative action. However, as an example, you are within your rights, and we encourage you to address the annexation itself or the current plans the Westward Look has submitted to date for such a rezoning. You also may wish to hold your remarks to the next town council meeting 2 weeks from this evening on October 21st, where there will be a formal public hearing on the annexation. Of course, you're welcome to speak tonight and in 2 weeks as well. So with that clarification, again, we're at the call to the audience portion of our audience, or call to the audience portion of our agenda. If you would like to speak during call to audience, this would be the time to find your to go to that participants icon, click on that, find your name, and click on the hand or *9 if you're calling in by phone. Before I invite those to speak during call to audience, I would like to read the following. Pursuant to the Arizona Open Meeting Law, mayor and council are not allowed to discuss, respond to, or take legal action on matters raised during call to audience. At the conclusion of call to audience, council members may direct town staff to review the matter, ask that the matter be placed on a future agenda, or respond to criticism made by speakers. If you wish to address the council on a matter not on the agenda, please notify us by clicking the raise your hand icon on your computer or pressing *9 on your phone now. So if I see some raised hands. Again, this is the call to audience portion of our agenda. These would be items that you would want to speak to that are not agendized this evening. The exception is the Westward Look annexation, which I explained earlier. I will take you in the order that I see on my computer. Again, if you would state your name and whether or not you are an Oro Valley resident. M. Bailey is our first speaker this evening.
Mr. Mayor, do you hear me?
Yes. Hear you and
okay,
see.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you very much. And let me start by saying my name is Matt Bailey, and I'm an attorney with a local law firm of Roussin, Lopez, and Lazardi. And I'm here on behalf of a resident named Elizabeth Dudley, who unfortunately couldn't be here tonight. Ms. Dudley lives at 221 East Via Oeste, and that is not within the town of Oro Valley limits. I also want to thank you for clarifying the nature of the comments tonight, and the nature of my comments in particular on behalf of Ms. Dudley relate only to the town's consideration of annexing the Westward Look property. So if that's okay, I'll continue on that particular topic. I also recognize that the forum for tonight is a little out of the ordinary to speak at a call to the audience on this type of topic. But as I go through these very brief comments, I hope you'll appreciate how important it is to Ms. Dudley to start engaging on this matter now and going forward. And in particular, the idea or the issue that Ms. Dudley wants to raise is her general concern for the area and the town's consideration of annexing or the Westward Look property into Oro Valley. As you may or may not know, there is a 1972 settlement agreement that relates to some of the property that is being considered as part of that annexation, and that's a 23-acre parcel that is immediately north of Ms. Dudley's property. This piece of property is very important to Mrs. Dudley, and I think also the surrounding neighborhood as well, and to the developer at Westward Look. It's our hope that as the town goes through the process of considering the annexation, that it bears in mind and it honors the terms and conditions of that settlement agreement in accordance with how it was originally written back in 1972. That's about it. And I recognize that this is maybe not the correct form for this, but it was very important for Mrs. Dudley to at least to start and engage with you and your staff, as well as with Westward Look. And I do want to acknowledge that I did speak with some representatives yesterday from Westward Look, and they were very accommodating in their time and addressing all the questions and comments that I had. So with that, I will just say that we look forward to working with the town and its staff as you go through this process of evaluating and considering the annexation of Westward Look. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to invite Mr. Tom Stegman to address the council. So staff, if you would please enable Mr. Stegman's microphone. Mr. Stegman, would you like your camera turned on?
Yeah, it doesn't matter. That's fine.
Okay, so we do have your video. And if you would just simply state your name and whether or not you're a resident of Oro Valley, and then you can proceed with your comments. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm Tom Stegman. I am a resident of Oro Valley. Thank you for allowing me to talk about the former Vistoso Golf Course. And thanks to the council as a whole for their service to the town and for their work in this matter. the community as a whole was behind TCF and purchasing and then sending Rompspanhoff packing to Canada. Unfortunately, they've refused to live by their agreement with TCF to sell the price at appraised value. Now they want to drag all of us back through this again for another year. We've tried to resolve the issue in a matter that's fair and reasonable to all parties and shown we're willing to donate what's needed to along with available grants to support doing that. Raising this amount of money within the community and support the town's parks and recreation is unparalleled. And I think you would agree with that. But we are at a breaking point. They want for us to continue to pay more due to their mistakes in thinking they could make millions buying and selling this property. And they stated they're going to keep coming back to create strife, divide us up, pitting neighbor against neighbor, and keep upping the price until we give in or move away. That's a tactics they used during 2019 and 2020, and they're going to continue to do so. We're still behind getting this situation resolved. Rompspan and their investors do not live here. We do. And to understand the real value, the town needs to get an appraisal, a yellow book appraisal on the property. Citizens have spoken more than once and made it clear we're not willing to allow the general plan to be changed no matter what, no matter how many times they submit their amendments. If they still refuse to listen, they need to be shown that we are serious. And we need the town to help us with this because they have options we don't have. We've just been at this too long and we're all fed up. We've been through a ringer. We cannot pay them more than fair market value. Everybody knows that. And the town has the tools in hand to ensure that happens. We need your help. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Rosa Daly, I'd like to call on you to address the council. If you would please enable Ms. Daly's microphone and video. Ms. Daly, if you would state your name and if you're a resident of Oral Valley.
Hi, can you hear me?
Can hear you. Would you like your video turned on?
No, thank you.
Okay.
Okay, so my name is Rosa Daly, and I'm a resident of the Siena neighborhood here in Oro Valley. So members of the Oro Valley Town Council and town staff, I'm speaking to you tonight to ask for your help. This community is devastated over the lost opportunity to resolve the issue of the Vistoso property because Rompspan rejected the Conservation Fund's fair market value offer. The GPA was probably your first introduction to Rompspan, but this community has been dealing with their tactics for more than 2 years. This has always been about money. Because their asking price has always been too high, the kind of buyers they have inflicted on this community never made it to the GPA before. But make no mistake, the divisive and exploitive tactics they use caused a great deal of pain and always involve convoluted ways to make the community pay. This community is in its third year of Rompspan's tactics. You just experienced a small taste of it as you watched the public notice signs go up while Rompspan was still under contract with the Conservation Fund. And when they were not able to influence an offer they were told and they agreed would be based on fair market value, they pulled their GPA application. What else did they do during their GPA application? They negotiated with a third party outside of the GPA process in the hope of getting a higher sale price. And of course, they agreed to pause the GPA to work with the Conservation Fund, but sadly, we know that they just became another casualty. This is just a sampling of how they have used the GPA process because it is always about money. So let's take a look at the money. When you do your research, you will learn that Rompspan is past the point of diminishing returns on this property. Every day forward, the delta between what they need to cover their cost and tax liabilities and the likely offers they would receive on any portion of this property under a rezoning application will grow larger and larger until not even a 20-story office building centered squarely on the driving range would make them whole or happy. Romspan is accruing losses by the minute, and they have made it clear that these losses are ours to bear one way or another if we want this nightmare to end. These are the terms we cannot escape. These are unreasonable and unfair. We have done all we can do. This community raised $1.5 million to cover the cost along with the state grant funds of the fair market value of this property. We need your help. That's all I can keep saying. We need your help. I want to close by saying that I do not regret bringing the Conservation Fund to Oro Valley. Mike Ford, I agree with you, Melanie. He is a class act. Even though we were not successful, observing this community's overwhelming trust and participation reminded me that there is still decency in this world in spite of all this community has been through. Please help us. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. I'd like to call on Richard's iPad to address the council staff. If you would please enable Richard's iPad's microphone to speak. Richard's iPad, can proceed with your comments if you would state your name and if you're a resident of Oro Valley.
Hi, can you hear me?
We can hear you, Richard. Would you like your video enabled?
No, thank you. Okay. Just want to say good evening. My name is Rich Molnar. My wife, Lori, and I are Oro Valley residents since 2008. We live in the Siena development in Rancho Vistoso. My comments tonight are regarding the Vistoso Golf Course. Again, to echo what you've heard before, town council members, we really need your help. Quite frankly, we're disgusted and outraged that Ronspan refused a fair market offer on the property from the Conservation Fund. And all of our neighbors feel the same way. As you well know, this was a citizen-initiated plan of action to help the residents and the town. We were all willing to participate in acquiring the property through donations to the fund. Again, we raised about $1.5 million. The closed golf course issue has been going on now for about 3 years. And to echo the sentiments you've already heard tonight, we really need your help to resolve this situation. It's clear that the community does not want any change to the general plan, no development. This is not going to change this year, next year, subsequent years. But again, please resolve this issue now. Condemnation or the mere threat of condemnation with Romspan, along with possible future involvement with the Conservation Fund, is really a solid option. Please strongly consider it. The town and the residents would both win. I can't understand how Romspan would not accept the fair market offer that they received. They're in a situation they can't win. It's really not fair to the residents of Oro Valley and the town of Oro Valley as to what they're doing. It's been mentioned before tonight. We don't want to play divide and conquer amongst all the residents of Rancho Vistoso. There's probably things going on behind the scenes, which is only conjecture on my part. But I'm sure that had something to do with the fact that they didn't accept the offer. And I'm going to just say again, please act now, as we're really all tired of dealing with Romspan in this issue. Thanks in advance for hearing me out and putting this as a priority action item on your schedule in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is phone number 444-6281. It's your opportunity to address the council staff if you would enable. Thank you. If you would please state your name and whether or not you're a resident of Oro Valley, 444-6281. You have the floor.
My name is Cindy Wicker. Can you hear me?
Yes, Cindy.
I'm a resident of the Siena neighborhood in Oro Valley, and I am here to add my voice to the chorus of outrage about Romspan's actions. As you've heard many times now, we are now in the third year dealing with this issue of the former Vistoso golf course. And for those of us who are directly affected, it has been a long slog. It's deplorable that this topic is still under discussion. Again, Romspan received that offer for its property based on an impartial and qualified appraisal for fair market value. And along with many other people, my husband and I pledged funds to support this resolution. Romspan's decision to reject that offer and its plan to reapply for a zoning change again next year are blatant attempts to intimidate and harass. These tactics must not succeed. This is our community and our neighborhood, and we residents have clearly expressed our vision for this property. If Robinson is allowed to prevail, our quality of life as well as our property values will be severely jeopardized indefinitely. It is incumbent upon the council to resolve this matter as the community as directed, and I ask you to please do so as soon as possible. It has already gone on much too long. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. I'd like to call on, the phone number is 780-4554 to address the council. Staff, if you would please enable phone number 780-4554. So if you would enable their microphone. Okay, so 780-4554, if you would please state your name and whether or not you're a resident of Oro Valley, you have the floor.
Thank you. Yes, my name is Teresa Morrow, and my husband and I, Jerry Lounsbury, live in Vistoso Highlands number 1. We've lived here since 2002. Thank you for the opportunity to address this issue. For more than 2.5 years, the community has spoken very clearly as to what must be done with the former golf course, which is to maintain it as recreational green space. The community has met the ultimate test by making significant financial pledges for the purchase of the 208 acres at fair market value. Romspen has not only abandoned the golf course, but has also failed to follow through on their commitment to establish and accept a fair market value with the conservation fund. Community members have actively participated in viable solutions to address and rectify this matter. Given the current status, the town of Oro Valley must step forward and take action against Romspen. Only the town has the legal authority and levers of power to execute the required actions needed to resolve this issue. The residents have done all they can do to resolve this issue. 1,200 plus emails to the town of Oro Valley, financial pledges, etc. We are in an unending loop with Romspen. It is time for decisive and conclusive action by the town of Oro Valley. This includes, 1, deny any changes to the general plan. 2, more specifically, deny any zoning changes or requests to the 208 acres. As I've heard others refer to it, it's the divide and conquer. 3, condemn the property, allow the community pledges at fair market value to be used to reestablish and support the natural beauty of the 208 acres as green space. Thank you again for the opportunity to speak to the group.
Thank you. I'd like to call on Ms. Karen Hill to address the council. Staff, if you would please enable Ms. Hill's microphone. And Ms. Hill, it's your opportunity to speak to the council this evening. Would you like your video enabled?
No, that's okay. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Thank you, Mayor, Vice Mayor, and City Council. First of all, I want to thank my fellow community members for discussing the Romspen property issue. I agree with them tremendously. But what I would like to do is bring up a topic that we haven't really been speaking about, and it would take into effect if we were to develop any of that property, and it's the effect of development on our urban heat index. As we know, Tucson is getting much hotter. It's been proven that all of Arizona is getting hotter and that the urban heat index is one of the reasons why. Should there be any development on the 208 acres, we will be contributing to that urban heat index. I've personally experienced that effect. All you need to do is take a little walk through one of the adjacent neighborhoods on the golf course. And then when you drop into the golf course, you could actually feel the temperature decrease by a couple of degrees. We need to keep this property zoned as recreation. It's the right thing to do for our environment, and it's the right thing to do for the future of our community. And I would like you to consider that as you discuss the future of the property. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'm just For anyone that's joined us, we're in the call to audience part of the agenda. If you want to speak on a topic that is not on the agenda, this is your opportunity. If you would go to the participants icon, find your name, click on that, and raise your hand. So we're approaching the close of call to audience. I'd like to invite Terry Hart to address the council staff. If you would please enable Mr. Hart's microphone. Mr. Hart, it's your opportunity to speak to the council. If you'd state your name and whether or not you're a resident of Oral Valley. Would you like your video enabled?
No, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Mayor, town council, staff, thank you for this time. My name is Terry Hart, and I'm an Oral Valley resident. And the topic is the former Vistoso Golf Course property. And I will definitely shorten these because just due to redundancy. But to say that myself and several hundred other Oral Valley residents are disappointed regarding the recent golf course property developments would be an understatement. And everyone knew back on September 25th, when those yellow signs went back up around Rancho Vistoso, that we were all just continuing to be played and steamrolled by Romspin. And this was reinforced again yesterday when Romspin withdrew their proposal for the remainder of this year. And you can go right back to their 2015 annual report. And it's been very evident with them that it's not just about the money, it's about more money. And even with the Conservation Fund, their outstanding organization, their fair market value, their fair market offer, well, in the end, the money, just not good enough for Romspin. And this is for a piece of property that represents approximately just 0.2% of Romspin's portfolio. For all of us, let that sink in. Just 0.2%. It's insignificant within their holdings. But to quote, Mike Ford and Jim Horn's Oral Valley, their recent podcast, that delta was significant. But for the entire town council going forward, I, like many, many others here in Oral Valley, view this now as being really, really simple. We want an end to all this now. And you, town council, now have more leverage. And you're going to have the opportunity and be in the position, hopefully, to play the role of hero for the residents of Oral Valley and find a means to permanently deny any future Romspin request for a general plan amendment. Because to continue to put all the residents here through this over and just continuously on doesn't do anybody any good. So we're looking for the town council support. We've got faith and trust in our town council to do the right thing. So please, please don't fail those who you represent, and please don't fail those who elected you. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to call on Mr. Michael Bilodeau to address the council. Staff, if you would please enable Mr. Bilodeau's microphone. Michael, this is your opportunity to speak to the council. If you'd please state your name and whether or not you're a resident of Oral Valley.
Hi, thank you. My name is Michael Bilodeau, and I am a resident of Oro Valley, and I'm also the president of Preserve Vistoso. We represent over 1,300 people who are interested in doing something good with the Vistoso property. Thank you for all the community members that have talked tonight. I think the council and town staff can take a look at even more comments. There's a lot of them. If you go to Oro Valley Projects, there's over 1,200 pages of comments expressing everything that people have said tonight and more. With Rosa and Tom, they brought the Conservation Fund to the table, and the Conservation Fund made an offer for the property, a fair market cash offer for the property, and Romspin turned it down. We just can't believe it. We also had a community that stepped forward to raise funds to make this possible. And yes, as everyone sort of said, we're looking for some way to make this happen. And so we definitely would appreciate anything the town can do and consider. You have over 1,000 people that have dedicated money and time to look for some option that allows Romspin to get away from the property. The Conservation Fund has brought that option to us, and they turned it down. So anything that the town can do, we would appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. So I appreciate those who've spoken tonight and the call to audience. I want to assure those that staff is, in regards to the Vistoso Golf Course, is reviewing the matter. Council will take action in the future. I'd like to close a call to the audience at this time. And we'll have Mr. Standish, if you would announce the first presentation item.
Proclamation Fire Prevention Month.
Thank you. I'd like to read the following proclamation. Whereas the town of Oro Valley is committed to ensuring the safety and security of all those living in and visiting Oro Valley, and home fires killed more than 2,630 people in the United States in 2017, according to the National Fire Protection Association, and fire departments in the United States responded to 357,000 home fires. And cooking is the leading cause of home fires in the United States, where fire departments responded to more than 173,200 annually between 2013 and 2017. And two of every five home fires start in the kitchen, with 31% of these fires resulting from unattended cooking, and more than half of reported non-fatal home cooking fire injuries occurred when the victims tried to fight the fire themselves. And where smoking alarms cut the risk of dying in reported home fires in half, and whereas the 2020 Fire Prevention Month theme, Serve Up Fire Safety in the Kitchen, effectively serves to remind us to stay alert and use caution when cooking to reduce the risk of kitchen fires. Now therefore, I, Joseph C. Winfield, Mayor of the Town of Oro Valley, hereby proclaim October 2020 as Fire Prevention Month, and urge all Oro Valley residents to check their kitchens for fire hazards and use safe cooking practices during Fire Prevention Month, and to support the many public safety activities and efforts of Golder Ranch Fire District Fire and Emergency Services. And with that, I'd like to introduce Ms. Anne Marie Braswell, Community Relations Manager with Golder Ranch Fire District, who will accept this proclamation this evening. And Anne Marie has a few words for us this evening.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We really appreciate the partnership. Once again, I'm visiting you to accept another proclamation for Fire Prevention Month. And we are so grateful that we have this wonderful partnership with the Town of Oro Valley, with Oro Valley Police Department, who runs all of our fire calls with us and EMS calls with us. So this is a community-wide effort every year to make sure that our residents stay safe and our most precious members of our households, our little ones or our aging, are always kept safe. So in particular this year and in light of the pandemic, kitchen safety is very important. More of us are preparing meals at home, and more of us are probably teaching our teenagers how to become more independent in the kitchen as well. So we just want to remind the public to stay safe, change their smoke detector batteries, contact Golder Ranch Fire District if you need help with that service. We're happy to help you do that. And stay informed. Visit our website, call on us. Our community engagement, of course, is more like what we're experiencing this evening. We're entertaining more Zoom and virtual meetings, but we are very aware of the needs in the public, and we're happy to provide any services they need. And we just really appreciate your partnership.
Anne Marie, thank you so much for joining us this evening. And we appreciate you and all the men and women of the Golder Ranch Fire District for all that they do to keep our community safe. So thank you.
Thank you, sir. It's our pleasure.
Mr. Standish, the second item of presentations.
Presentation and update by President CEO Brent Virad of Visit Tucson.
Okay. Brent, we welcome you to our council meeting this evening.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, thank you. I don't know if you can see me or not. Let me hit that. Okay. Wonderful. Thank you. Really appreciate the opportunity. Can we get to the next slide, please? So just taking a look, what I wanted to do is just jump in and talk about COVID-19. Then I'll come back and talk a little bit about Visit Tucson. in our efforts with the town of Oro Valley. As you take a look at the numbers that are posted there, you can see just some of the devastation that's happened to the tourism industry throughout the United States. Tourism is just one of those industries, obviously, with COVID-19 that has really been impacted and far more severely than most industries. Fortunately, we're starting to see things go back up in the right direction. Again, once the virus hit, in force in March, for us, the bottom was April, and we've gradually been able to build back up to a point where I think we're certainly somewhat stable at this point. Can I have the next slide, please? Looking at just Metro Tucson's lodging, when you take a look at the first two columns there, you're looking at 2012 versus 2019. So it took us 7 years to build to a very respectable level, especially as we take a look at what's out there in the industry from a performance aspect. But for us in 2020, after a terrific start in January and February, obviously with COVID-19, things really started to fall off in March. So the numbers that you see listed for 2020 in that third column, that represents January through August. We just had an industry forecast through Smith Travel Research. What they're predicting for us is that those numbers should stay pretty much the same. The one number that will go up is room revenue. We think that we'll probably wrap up the year between 270 and 290 million. And also the forecast for 21 is certainly for substantial growth over what we see in 2020. For us, we think that probably, through our peak season, probably through April, May, it's going to be still a difficult proposition as people get more comfortable with the concept of traveling. But things are supposed to start to get better as we head into the latter part of 2021. And can we get the next slide, please? Looking at our current status, again, this is January through August. What we do is we pick, it's a self-selected competitive set. Tucson's one of 15 cities within that set. And so what we're trying to do is we're trying to pick some of the biggest cities in the Western and Southwestern United States against which to compete. And as you take a look at those numbers and kind of where we rank at this point, we're actually faring better than many cities in the Western and Southwestern U.S. right now throughout this pandemic. We're certainly not excited about, where we stand from an occupancy, average daily rate. RevPAR is the acronym for revenue per available room. So we're doing okay at this point. We certainly believe that better days are on the horizon. Next slide, please.
Brent, could you just share with the council, staff, and members of the public? You sent out some information this morning that I think is relevant to what you've just shared with us.
Yeah, certainly. One of the things that we really pay attention to a great extent is travel media coverage. And so we've got a terrific communications team. They're great at bringing out media on a year-round basis. We've been able to generate more than 35 million in equivalent travel media coverage in each of the past 5 years. We're well on our way to doing so again this year. One of those efforts, hosting editors from Condé Nast Traveler. And I think it certainly helped our case, even though it was a reader's choice poll, but Condé Nast Traveler just came out today and named Metro Tucson as the number 9 best city to travel to in terms of large U.S. cities. Coming up here. So that'll be in the November 2020 publication, but it's online currently at CondéNastTraveler.com. So being able to be recognized up there again with Chicago, New York, San Francisco, and other cities, for us, it's really gratifying. I think it just goes back to the fact that it's the same concept that anytime we can bring a customer here, whether it's a meeting planner, somebody on the media front, a tour operator or a travel agent, if we get them to Tucson and Oro Valley and this entire area, they're going to come back. It's just such a beautiful area. And there's just still, we'll never overcome every misperception until we get everybody out here. But it's such a beautiful area. We're really proud of that designation. We do think that, again, Tucson's in Oro Valley, we're being seen far more than we have previously. So we'll keep up those media relations efforts. But thank you, Mayor, for bringing that up. Taking a look at, again, one of the big reasons why I think we all should care about what's happening with travel is when we take a look at the numbers. So visitors into Pima County, these are 2019 figures. They spent $2.6 billion, and you can see the job impacts, also just the local tax revenue that's coming in. So right now, we're down about 35% overall in revenue. And so when you take a look at how that impacts, again, the overall visitor spending, jobs, how that's going to impact the local tax revenue, that's something that that we're certainly going to work hard to try and bring back those numbers sooner rather than later. Next slide, please. So for us, again, once the pandemic hit in March, we engaged in a tourism recovery plan, and our intent with that was to have basically a 15-year plan. We are on the same fiscal year as the town, so July through June. We started the plan in March. It'll be in place through June of 21. We made some good early impacts in terms of being able to really hopefully help the community in terms of those recovery efforts and making sure that, again, hotels and restaurants, working with the airport and the airlines, anything that we can do to try to help the industry recover. I think we were effective early on. Right now, we're in the midst of a lot of domestic marketing. I'll talk a little bit more about that in just a minute. The areas where we really haven't been able to make progress, we didn't know when we put the plan together in March what it would look like in terms of just potential border closures. So what we've seen, obviously, for the past several months is that the U.S. borders with both Canada and Mexico have been closed to non-essential travel, so essentially leisure travelers. We have a Mexico marketing department, visitor centers in Sonora. There's a lot of pent-up demand, and we're excited to get those borders reopened as soon as it's deemed safe to do so. We've got a lot of folks that are ready, willing, and able to spend a lot of money with us, and we're excited about that possibility. Next slide, please. So looking at our status, just kind of jumping back into who we are as Visit Tucson, we are a 501c6 nonprofit organization. One of the things that that means for us as a C6 nonprofit business organization is that we are not eligible for the Paycheck Protection Program. We've had to be, I think, very careful with our dollars. We're in good shape financially right now, considering everything that's happened out there. But wanted you to see again, the impacts with our budget as well. So we've had to bring our staff down by 12 employees. When the pandemic hit, again, at July through June fiscal year, we had basically 3.5 months to try and find a way to cut more than $1 million in expenses, and we were successful in doing so as our budget came down by about $1 million. This year, we're operating with a $7.5 million budget, and that includes a $500,000 coronavirus relief funds grant from Pima County. We have to spend those funds by the end of December. It's a marketing reimbursement program. So we're going to be out there marketing, Metro Tucson, Oral Valley, everything that we have to offer very heavily here over the next few months. Looking ahead to our following fiscal year, that's kind of our cliff, if you will. We're funded by the city of Tucson, which currently is about $5 million out of our budget. We're funded a year in arrears. And so taking a look at collections so far, obviously, we've got some work to do. So we're having those conversations now with Tucson to see what we might be able to do to hopefully keep their investment level at or near current levels. Next slide, please. For us, it all comes back to the travel sentiment. So there's a couple of things out there as well. The consumer confidence, no question about it. We need people feeling safe if they're going to make that journey. And when you think about travel, there's just so many touch points along the way. It could be anything from the ride to the airport, being in the airport, being on an airplane, taking an Uber, to a hotel. Is the hotel safe and clean? So the industry is working together very closely on several different initiatives to try to ensure that safety is paramount and that customers traveling can have the safest experience possible. But we've got to get that consumer confidence back. The other aspect, too, is that we've got plenty of people with money and the desire to travel, but they have a lot of questions about whether they're going to be able to have the type of experience that they want to have when they travel. Perhaps, people coming into Oral Valley, is their favorite restaurant open? Are there restrictions on the trails? Am I going to have to wear a mask everywhere I go? What are the rules? How are those rules different from where I live? And so that's the type of thing that we're trying to overcome from an informational standpoint as well. So consumer confidence, And then also just making sure that, again, we can help educate people as to the type of experience that they'll have. Next slide, please. So as we take a look at our recovery, what we're living on right now essentially is mostly leisure travel or, you know, vacationers for the most part. Several aspects of our business still need to recover. And as we take a look at what's happening on the meetings front, in the case of, let's talk about El Conquistador, the Hilton. So they're looking at probably, you know, anywhere from 55 to 65% of their revenue comes from meetings on an annual basis. Not many meetings are happening currently, just based on CDC guidelines in terms of group sizes and what that might look like out there. Slowly, we're starting to see some progress. Comes back to the number of COVID-19 cases. Fortunately, those have diminished significantly. Had a little bit of an outbreak again when U of A started back up, but you know, we're confident that things are going to be able to return. Flights for us, you know, flights are key. We're going to have about 50% of the air service this peak season, which for us is you know, January through mid-April. So 50% of the air service. What you're going to see is a lot of California flights have been cut significantly, but we still have quite a bit of air service into places like Seattle, Denver, Portland, Minneapolis, Chicago, where we get a lot of typical winter visitors from. The borders, again, for us, being able to bring back those snowbirds from Canada, being able to open the borders and get the travelers from Mexico coming back, that's going to be vital for us as well. And then I've got a couple of slides coming up where we'll show you just kind of our interpretation from a creative standpoint of how we're talking about wide open spaces. What we're seeing out there in terms of the research for customers to want to travel, they want to see that they can not be in a massive crowd, that they can come someplace where they can really, as, you know, based on our slogan and tagline, free yourself. And that's certainly what I think Tucson and Oro Valley offers. Next slide, please. So in terms of just the return on investment, as we take a look back at last fiscal year, what we do is we just look at the meetings and the sports related events that book into Oro Valley facilities. And that's where we come up with the return on investment. There's a lot of things that we're able to provide in terms of just the leisure marketing out there as well. We know that we're helping to drive some leisure travelers into Oro Valley. We don't take credit for those because it's so hard to measure. Maybe we had a 5% impact. Maybe we had none. Maybe we had 100%. But for us, at least on the meetings and the sports side, we know if the lead came from us. We know if it books in your facilities and or in your hotels and resorts. And so that's how that's factored in as well. We're really excited to have a spring swimming event coming into the Oro Valley Aquatic Center. And that'll be a $250,000 economic impact. But that's USA Artistic Swimming. That's going to be coming in terms of the senior and junior swimming championships. Again, the town's investment this year, $275,000. Belief at this point, we think that's about 20 to 25% of your bed tax revenue there as well. The other thing, too, that a lot of people don't always realize is that visitors often spend far more in sales tax than they do in bed tax. And so with those sales tax dollars going back into the town's coffers, along with Tucson and the state of Arizona, certainly a beneficial aspect to it as well. Next slide, please. And then just looking at the next steps for us, you know, it's just paramount that that we can get back to booking meetings and sports events into your facilities just as soon as we possibly can. We're hearing from Major League Soccer that that they want to come back. You've had the New York Red Bulls at Naranja Park, you know, for the past several years. We're hopeful that we can facilitate, you know, that type of relationship again. Again, the leisure marketing is going to be vital. You'll see quite a bit coming out from us this fall. One of the things is we really don't market in Tucson and Oro Valley. Everything that we do is outside. So you're not going to see a lot of our advertising. We've got some creative coming up here in just the next couple of slides. But Westward Look Annexation, eager to work with the town on that. Really appreciate, again, the town manager working with us in that regard, along with Amanda Jacobs. And then videos. And I'll talk about that in just a second, too. Next slide, please. So what we want to do is just these last two slides, want to just show you just examples of some of the creative that we're out there with right now. So being able to show a place like Catalina State Park, you can see just from a cycling standpoint, mountain biking, hiking, being able to get out there and explore without feeling claustrophobic, with being able to enjoy some of the world's most incredible scenery. Next slide, please. And this should be my final one. Wide open spaces, this is our campaign. So as you take a look at, again, just what we're doing from a digital standpoint out there, a lot of digital advertising that we're running, but just those wide open spaces. People are still surprised to find out that, again, there's mountains in Tucson, that there's so much greenery and so many things to be able to see and do. And with that, I'll wrap up the slide portion of it. And then, Mr. Mayor, I'm very open to this. We've got just a short video to show you that we created in terms of the Oro Valley Aquatic Center. We can show that now, or I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Yeah, let's see the video, and then we can open up to questions.
Okay. And the video, just real quickly, our intent is to lengthen this. We started putting it together back in March. We wanted to get several events at Oro Valley Aquatic Center, do some interviews with the Aquatic Center staff and some of the event organizers. We'll go back and get that as meetings and sports events come back. But with that, let's go ahead and show the video. I promise it's actually a little bit more compelling than this. Doesn't look like the sound's syncing up.
We get the message.
And we'll be happy to get that, again, to the town in any format necessary. We'd love for the Oro Valley residents to see it. As an Oro Valley resident myself, I take a lot of pride in Oro Valley Aquatic Center. Great facility. The fact that we can bring USA Swimming events there just speaks to the quality of the venue itself. And so we will make this into a longer sales piece as well. We want to get some interviews in there, make it more of a 2 to 3 minute finished video, and be able to use that to sell new and different events and activities coming into the Aquatic Center. But with that, happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Council, it's your opportunity to questions, comments for Brent.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes, Councilmember Rodman.
Yeah, I want to thank you for all you've done during the time period that I've been involved with council and even planning and zoning. I think this is a time that we need to have work in this partnership even more so than in the past. I know there could be somebody saying, well, our bed tax is down, and why are we paying this money? This is how we get it back. This is how we get people to trust to come to the Tucson area, to our Hilton, Elk, and Conquistador, for their benefit, but certainly for the benefit of the town. So I just want to tell you that I really support everything that you've done, and I thank you for what you've done and what you will do, because this is an important time to get us back on track. Thanks, friend.
Thank you.
Thanks, council member.
Other questions, comments?
Yes, Mr. Mayor.
Council member Pena.
Thank you. Brent, I just want to say that I think what you're doing with the wide open spaces aligns with the distancing that everybody's having to do. And I think it's a great advertisement. And I also want to say that I think you've done a great job. You're in an industry that's been very, very challenged. And I think you've been a great partner of the town. And I just say, keep up the good work. Very,
thank
very
you.
Good.
Thank you, and really appreciate the support from you and Councilmember Rodman through the years. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Other questions, comments?
One final thing I might mention, Mr. Mayor, if it's okay, would like to thank you for your board service at Visit Tucson. Thank you for being on our strategic planning committee and helping us find our way forward as well. Appreciate it.
Of course. Yep, Brent, I'm impressed with the Visit Tucson's 10-year tourism plan. And I appreciate you highlighting the Aquatic Center this evening. I'm interested in knowing, in addition to the Aquatic Center and golf and Oro Valley, what do you see as some of the town's assets when it comes to tourism? What do you see as some of our other strengths in addition to the Aquatic Center and golf?
Well, I think your outdoor spaces, Catalina State Park, at times, again, as somebody who goes there fairly regularly, it was difficult to get in there and find a parking space at times. People are looking for those opportunities to get out and recreate, and we talk about that a lot. I think the town's willingness and ability to accommodate events that come into the town, I think that's very important as well. It's good exposure out there, and I think that's very helpful. But I think also looking at, Honeybee Canyon, for example, looking at the loop that comes through from a cycling standpoint, there's really a lot in terms of, again, regardless of what your age is and where you're at in life, this is a great place to live. And one of the things that we've really found on the tourism front is that great places to live are great places to visit. And so that's why, again, as an Oro Valley resident, I love living here. I love the fact that First Avenue just got resealed last week. And, you know, it's in great shape, especially compared to some of the roads I'm driving on. But thanks just for the quality of the community. Oro Valley is a place that people want to be. It's a beautiful place. And the physical product that's been built here as well, I think with the standards is really strong. So anything that we can all do collectively to keep the quality of life here in Oro Valley as strong as we possibly can, believe me, it pays off in a big way on the tourism front as well.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you for joining us this evening. We appreciate your presentation and all that you do for the town of Oro Valley and the region. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Mr. Standish, presentation 3.
Presentation and possible discussion of the town's fiscal year 2020-21 financial update through July 2020.
Ms. Wendy Gomez will present our financial update this evening.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. I'm pleased to present our financials through July for fiscal year 2021. I'll try to make this pretty brief because July is usually a pretty light month in terms of our expenditures as well as revenues. They tend to be a pretty light month, so I'll try to make this brief. We'll be covering the General Fund, Highway Fund, and Community Center Fund this evening. Next slide, please. Starting with the General Fund revenues, walking through just some of our main revenue sources, things are looking actually very positive so far. Local sales taxes, our actuals through July were about $1.8 million, and that's just over 10% of our budget. Those are definitely trending slightly better than expected. We had really strong construction collections in July, and retail and online collections looked great as well. And our state shared revenues, so those are at about $900,000 through July. And that's trending as expected. Again, with that particular revenue source, July tends to be a pretty light month, so we are doing fine there. On charges for services, those are obviously looking a little under budget. We still got the facility closures that we're dealing with, and just the seasonality of the revenue sources too. So actuals in that category are just over $120,000 through July. License and permits are looking great. Those are at about $156,000 through July, budget of just under $1.6 million. Commercial and residential both looked very positive for the month. We actually issued 28 single-family residential permits in July. Just as a reminder, our budget for the full fiscal year is 225 single-family residential permits, so that number is looking great there. And then our all other category, that's everything else, including our grant revenues, our IGA with the RTA for transit, transfers and that sort of thing. Those typically trend low this time of year. That's just the timing of transfers that are coming into the fund and the grants as well. So that's expected, and those revenues are still looking fine overall in that category. In total for the revenues in the general fund, percentage of budget, we're at about just over 7% through July, and we are still expecting to end budget point at this time. Usually through July, with just so little data, we aren't usually revising any year-end estimates for right now. Next slide, please. Moving on to the general fund expenditures, personnel, our actuals were about $1,030,000. That's 3.6% of the budget. We are trending slightly below. That's due to several things. There's obviously some personnel vacancy savings, some temporary hiring freezes, but that also has to do with the timing of when payrolls hit in the fiscal year. There may not be a full two payrolls in July, and so some of the timing of when those payroll hits can affect that as well. On the O&M side, we're at about $623,000 for actuals in O&M in the general fund. That's below budget this time of year, but as I mentioned, July is pretty light in terms of spending. You know, departments are still kind of, you know, ramping up, preparing, reviewing all of their budgeted line items and starting to kind of jump into those. And so we expect that number to be a little low through July anyway. On the capital side, that's light as well. Same thing there, just departments starting to ramp up with all their budget line items and really jumping in. And so the spending would obviously trend up as we've progressed through the fiscal year. The transfers out, currently we are just over 800,000 or 815,000. And that is what that is the budgeted transfer from the general fund to the debt service fund for our budgeted debt service that the general fund covers. In total, our general fund expenditure actuals through July are just under $2.5 million, or 5.5% of the budget. And just as on the revenue side, we are still expecting those to come in on budget for right now. Next slide. Here's the chart for the general fund. Again, things really looking pretty positive. You can see the current year actuals at 3.1 compared to last fiscal year, 3.2. That's pretty impressive considering COVID and everything that's currently facing us. And so those are trending just fine on the expenditure side. Those are actually less than last fiscal year at about 2.5 million compared to 2.9 million last year. Next slide, please. And then moving on to the highway fund, things pretty vanilla there as well. HERF revenues are trending just fine. We are at just under 300,000 through July, or 8.5% of budget. So those are still trending on budget right now. On the expenditure side, the expenditures in this fund in particular are usually pretty low in July. Obviously, payment preservation hasn't ramped up yet. So you'll see those expenditures pick up as we progress through the fiscal year. And same with the revenues in the fund, the expenditures are still expected on budget for right now. Next slide, please. Here's a chart for the highway fund. Revenues of 0.3 million, about 300,000 compared to about 500,000 at this point last fiscal year. And then expenditures pretty much flat. As I mentioned, the spending in this fund in particular is usually pretty light through July. Next slide, please. Moving on to the community center funds, contracted revenues are at just under 7%, or about 240,000 through July. There's some seasonality, obviously, in these revenues. Overall, they are trending as expected for right now. The town operating revenues, no surprise there, those are looking sharply below budget through July, and that's just due to some of the refunds we've issued for members, as well as the fact that the facility was closed during the month of July. The half-cent sales tax revenues are still trending on budget as expected. Those came in at about 220,000 through July, or 8.8% of budget. So what's helping there are the positive signs that we're seeing in retail and remote collections. On the expenditure side, things are trending fine there as well. The contracted expenditures are at about 364,000, or 8% of budget through July. And the town operating expenditures are below budget just due to the fact that the facility is closed. So O&M personnel is going to be a little light for right now. Next slide, please. The chart for the Community Center Fund, comparing things pretty much flat to last fiscal year, actually. The revenue's at about $500,000 compared to $500,000 last year. And essentially what's happening are the golf revenues are making up for some of the shortfalls that we're seeing on the town revenue side. So those are almost a kind of a saving grace right now. The fact that those revenues are doing well is helping to offset that. On the expenditure side, those are pretty much flat to last fiscal year, a little less at about $500,000 compared to about $600,000 last fiscal year. And with that, we'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Gomez, for your presentation. Council, questions?
Mayor?
Councilmember Rodman?
Yes, this is really for Mary, I think. We are in the fall, although it's at the beginning part of the fall, and we as council, when we approved the budget, said out loud that someplace in the fall we start to look again to see what we might be able to do for our staff across the board. And I'm wondering, Mary, if you give us some thought of the when of that. When do you think you might be in a position to say, okay, we should be looking at this more seriously? Are we talking about still sometime this calendar year based on what you're seeing so far? Obviously, we should see August pretty quickly, I would think, since we're in October already, and that would give us 2 months. But I'm just curious of what your thinking is there. Obviously, our staff has gone above and beyond in so many ways, and yet it had bore the brunt of, the freeze and filling vacancies and such. And so just would like to get an update on your thoughts.
Certainly. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Rodman. We are tentatively scheduling a presentation of a five-year forecast, our updated five-year forecast, for your meeting in December, assuming we will have enough information in terms of our collections. And so, my goal is obviously to make sure we have enough information with which to do that. I would be less concerned about an increase in this current fiscal year than I am about the compounding effect of that in the forecast, which is why it's so important to project just beyond the current fiscal year. So enough unknowns for the next few months that I'm not comfortable making that recommendation to you now. I would predict sometime after the first of the year that I'd be ready to come to you and say, okay, here's where we are, here are the numbers, here's what it supports, here's our projection for next fiscal year and what that means, and then be prepared to recommend, hopefully, I'm cautiously optimistic based on our receipts so far and what we're seeing. You're seeing the July numbers. I've already, had the benefit of seeing some of our additional collections. We just haven't closed those months yet. And again, cautiously optimistic that we're continuing to see. But, again, I read an article today from the University of Arizona about how nationally there's been a slowdown on the economic recovery. And so those are all things that that could play into the picture in terms of what that recommendation is. I still recall very strongly the council's position last February in your strategic planning retreat about your desire to want to support our employees. And I do as well, and I support that direction. And so it is a priority for me. And you can rest assured that that I do intend to bring something forward to council just after the new year.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any additional questions? Okay, hearing none. The next agenda.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, I do. I'm sorry.
Ivy.
I'm kind of slow at unmuting myself. Mary, you said that you have been able to look at some of our revenue for, I believe, the last couple of months. How is that trending for us? Are we still on track for bringing in what we have projected? Are you seeing an impact on of COVID on those funds?
Certainly, Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Jones, Ivy. What we are seeing is our revenue collections are better than our very conservative projections, which is where we want to be.
Good.
We want to under-promise and over-deliver, right? And I believe that that's exactly where we are, that we were conservative in our projections.
Mm-hmm.
That was the right position to take in terms of our developing and our budget. And we're seeing our revenues exceed those projections, at least to date. And if you don't mind, Mr. Mayor, I'd like Ms. Gomez to also jump in terms of her review of what she's seeing following, you know, what we received for July. So
great. Thank you.
Ms. Gomez?
Someone needs to unmute her. There we go.
Thank you. thank you, Mary. Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Jones-Ivy, things are continuing to trend very well. I can go ahead and mention the sales taxes probably for August, as well as the state shared revenues. Those still looked very positive. Strong on construction still, retail, online collections, those categories are trending very well compared to our budget. And as Mary mentioned, we were very conservative with the budget there. And the state shared revenues, again, no concerns there either. That was a conservative budget also, and no concerns there. Things are trending as expected or even better than expected, really.
Okay. Thank you, Wendy, so much.
You're welcome.
Mr. Mayor.
Councilmember Solomon.
Wendy, maybe I'm misunderstood, but my understanding was that our sales tax revenues, in fact, have been surpassing what they were a year ago, way pre-COVID. And in fact, that we're actually collecting, our sales tax revenue collections are above what they were a year ago. And just the contrary to what the initial concerns were, that they'd be going down the COVID, that people have actually been spending more money and generating more sales tax. So is that correct or not? Are we actually above where we were a year ago?
Let me open up that file, Councilmember Solomon, and pull that up for you real quick, just to kind of see where we're at in terms of growth. Overall,
I was going to say, because my recollection was, didn't we finish last year, which just ended, you know, obviously June 30th, above what our budget was that we had made back in 2019, long before COVID?
We did, right? Councilmember Solomon, that's correct. And through July for the current fiscal year compared to last fiscal year, collections are actually up 18%.
Okay.
So the contracting was up significantly. Construction, comparing year over year, construction was actually up just under 40% compared to July, last July. Retail was up 16%, and that's some pretty significant growth we're seeing from big box stores, some of the larger collections from some of our top, like our top 10 taxpayers, we're seeing a lot of growth there, and then remote collections too. So those are definitely, through July with COVID, still to be up 18% compared to July of last fiscal year, that's great news for us.
Okay, thanks. And just one last question is from the half-cent sales tax and the community fund. Looked like you were saying we're about $220,000 a month, or am I correct that we're going to be about $2.6 million in that half-cent sales tax this year?
Well, Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Solomon, we need to be careful about taking 1 month and trending it forward, because those are seasonal revenues. But the fact that it's at that percentage through July is actually, that's very positive for us. That's looking good, because usually through July, that's usually kind of a light month in terms of sales tax collections for us. So yeah, overall, definitely positive there on that side.
Okay, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Any additional questions? Okay, hearing none. Ms. Gomez, thank you. Ms. Jacobs, thank you. We appreciate the presentation and the information that you've provided to the council. Our next agenda item this evening is the consent agenda. I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Mayor.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
I would like to have item B, resolution number R20-48, approving a two-year extension of the Budget and Finance Commission, removed from the consent agenda for discussion.
Okay. Would you like to make a motion to approve the other items? So we'll remove item B. I move to approve items A, C, and D of the consent agenda.
I'll second that.
Any discussion? Mr. Standish, if you take a roll call vote, please. And before you do that, would you please read the items for the public?
Yes.
Sure. Consent agenda item A, minutes, September 9th, 16th, 23rd, 2020. Item C, request for approval of a final plat for the Shannon 80 residential subdivision located on the east side of Shannon Road and immediately south of Ironwood High School. Item D, request to initiate a general plan amendment and rezoning for the Westward Look Resort located at the Ina Road and Westward Look Drive intersection.
Thank you. Mr. Sanders, would you take a roll call vote, please?
Vice Mayor Barrett?
Yes.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy?
Yes.
Councilmember Nicholson?
Yes.
Councilmember Pena?
Yes.
Councilmember Rodman?
Yes.
Councilmember Solomon?
Yes.
And Mayor Winfield?
Yes. So the motion to approve consent agenda items A, C, and D is approved 7-0. Councilmember Jones-Ivy, you pulled item B. You'd like to speak on that topic?
Yes, I did. Can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Mayor, I asked to have this pulled because I noted that this is a two-year extension for the Budget and Finance Commission, and I would like to have this commission be one of our standing ongoing commissions. If we approve 2 years tonight and then we go, we'd be, what, 2 years out from today, having to approve this again, I think it would just serve us a lot better to just make it standing and ongoing. I do realize that this commission was put together on a trial basis, but I think that they've done an excellent job. I certainly have benefited from the diversity of the commission members and the advice that they've given us. And so to that end, I would like to see us make this a standing ongoing commission.
Are you making a motion?
Or? I am. And my motion is I move to approve the Budget and Finance Commission to be a continuous standing commission.
Second.
Yeah, seconded by Councilmember Nicholson. Discussion.
Mr. Mayor.
Councilmember Solomon.
I'm sorry, but I must respectfully disagree. This commission has been very troubled from the day it started. There were potential open meeting law violations. There was a very poor performance regarding the golf course where they accused staff of having false numbers, and that they supposedly had the correct numbers, which when pressed on that issue, they admitted they did not. And in fact, asked to amend their minutes where they had discussed that. I still feel this is policy issues for the council. And I have not seen anything come forth from the commission. There has been any help with the council's decision on financial matters. Therefore, I'm opposed to the extension of this commission based on its performance since its formation.
Thank you. Any other comments, discussion?
Mr. Mayor, I have a question, and this is probably for Mary Jacobs. So if the council approves having this as a continuous commission, in 2 years or at any time that there is a change in council that decides that the commission is not necessary to continue on, such as it was dissolved before, I think back from, I want to say 2008, it went for a number of years without it, and then it was brought back 2 years ago, would a future council be able to rescind a decision that's done tonight by council? By vote of a majority vote.
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Pena, yes, of course. The town council is the policy-making body that makes those decisions, that determines which boards and commissions are to benefit the, you know, providing advice to the elected body. And so, as you mentioned, it's happened in the past. There have been adjustments, additions, deletions of boards and commissions. This body, as an example, eliminated the Municipal Property Corporation over this past year because it no longer served the purpose for which it was originally put together. And so, so yes, of course, that is a that is solely a legislative decision and in the authority of the town council.
Mayor.
Okay, thank you.
Councilmember Rodman. Well, just one moment. Councilmember Pena, were you finished? Or?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Councilmember Rodman.
Yeah, I hesitated whether to even weigh in on this if I won't be here to work with them. The but in that sentence is that I like the motion or the consent agenda the way it was for two more years for the following reason. It appeared to me, and this is my personal view, and I attended every one of the meetings, was that it was very difficult for quite some time for that commission to figure out what it was charged to do. So as a result, I think there was a lot of redundancy. There were a lot of policy issues that the Finance and Budget Commission, in fact, dealt with that were really, in my view, they were council discussions. I've seen this most recent number of meetings. I think that staff and commission have figured out where their lane is in terms of the advice for finance and budget. And I think that it can get there where it can add. It concerned me for some time that they were sort of a shadow council in what they were asked to do. It wasn't their doing. They were asked to weigh in on what I thought were policy issues rather than financial issues. So if I were going to be here, I would be stronger about it. But I really would like to see this two-year extension to see if, again, this can be really put into the lane where it really would help. It wouldn't have staff, in effect, presenting the same exact presentations to them and then to us. And I think we need that time to see how effective they can be as an addition rather than as a redundancy. So I think they can, and I think they're beginning to do that. I'd like to see it have that 2-year extension and then see if it's gotten there. That's just my personal opinion. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you.
Mr. Mayor.
I'm not sure who's speaking.
Sorry, that's me, Vice Mayor Barrett. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks. I'm in support of Councilmember Jones Ivey's motion. I think that one of the main purposes of boards and commissions is to make recommendations to council. But in addition to that, just to ask a lot of good questions and have an opportunity to delve in a little more deeply into some of these issues. And I, for one, have really appreciated the opportunity to just listen in on those conversations through the technology that's available of those being recorded. So that you know, allows a lot of questions to be answered and helps to inform my understanding of things that the council is deciding on, whether that changes my vote one way or another is less of an issue. I'm, you know, in a policy decision, I'm going to make the policy decision I'm going to make. And I think that the council is going to do that in the sense that, you know, we have the opportunity to set the policy, not the commission. We can consider their recommendation. We can find out the information, and that's good. And we still have the opportunity to set the policy. And as Council Member Pena pointed out, you know, there's nothing that locks this in permanently, but we don't have any of our other boards and commissions on this certain time periods where they get renewed. So I think it makes sense to make the Budget and Finance Commission a standing board similarly to our other boards. And if it turns out that it isn't helpful to a future council, they can do something about that and adjust the boards and commissions as has been done in the past. Thanks.
Any additional discussion?
Mayor?
Councilmember Nicholson?
Yeah. Thanks, Mayor Winkle. Yeah, I've been sitting in all the Budget and Finance Commission meetings, and what I like about it is they're extremely bright people. Like, for anything finance that we have, when we saw the resumes, it was me, you, and Rhonda, I believe, and when we had those resumes sitting in front of us, I was flabbergasted of the quality of people that we had on those commissions. So I love finance. I feel like I have a pretty good understanding of finance, but seeing them sit there and discuss things and spitball things between each other, I learn a lot. I feel it's advantageous to me. They are essentially what you'd say, like our shareholders, you know, we're the board of directors, they're shareholders, and you know, having them there being so involved, they're spending their own time, they try and dig into the details, and I feel like I learn a lot. And I think, you know, to some of Steve's comments, I think there is probably a little learning when you get it started going again. And I just think for all the citizens, the whole town together, I think we all benefit when, you know, the council members can see a different perspective from them asking certain questions. And they are, you know, we're not here for our own sake, we're here for them. They're citizens and they're concerned citizens enough to spend their own free time. So I think it's a really good benefit for us to be able to have that knowledge and, you know, the poking and prying questions. It can, you know, be time consuming for staff. And I do understand that it's not completely free, but I think it is overall a benefit for us. And yeah, I do see that just having it there, we don't have to extend it every single year. I think is a benefit. And I think it's something we should keep for as long as we can. So I think it just puts a little bit of a barrier. I mean, honestly, it is just a little bit of a barrier. You'd have to go in there and say, oh, we don't want this anymore. And, you know, it may be just a speed bump, maybe really easy to just go right over that speed bump. But as much of a speed bump as it is, it'd still be nice to have it in there so that we can maybe keep it in for longer if we can. Thanks.
Thank you.
Excuse me, Mr. Mayor, I just have one more. I guess it's more of a comment. When I look at this timeline and how the process is with, when we talk about all the other commissions, so if this were left to a 2-year, really, is there any difference letting it roll over just the 2 years? There's really no impact other than we have commissioners that stay on, or we have to have commissioners reapply just like they're doing with any other particular commission that we have. Is there anything that's really compelling from a process standpoint to leave it as a 2-year extension? Mary, do you want to speak to that?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Councilmember Pena, you know, the staff is perfectly happy to work with boards and commissions that you feel this is about. This particular commission doesn't advise us per se.
Correct.
It advises the council. So we bring items forward with recommendations and discussion in order to get input. Sometimes based on their input, we then revise recommendations and bring them forward to council. Sometimes we may disagree with the recommendations of the particular commission, and we would bring it forward then as a staff recommendation. But it does give the council an opportunity to see, you know, a differing perspective. And, you know, this council and previous councils have always welcomed input of our residents and our citizens. And so I think it's appropriate for the council, for every council, to decide what kind of information, what kind of input you want from the citizenry to best support you in your role as an elected body. And and the staff will gladly bring those items to not just this commission, but all of the other ones that you identify are important, so that you can be as well informed as possible as you consider the business of this community.
Right, and I appreciate that explanation. My question is more from a process standpoint, Mary. What changes with putting application processes out? If we just go the 2 years, run it to and extend it for 2 years, like it is on the agenda, what changes compared to any other commission? I mean, are we really put out now by extending it 2 years or not extending it 2 years and leaving it as far as the process goes?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Councilmember Pena. I apologize for missing your last question completely, but
that's okay. It was a good answer, and it was very informative.
Since the appointments are two-year appointments anyway, and we have no current vacancies on the Budget and Finance Commission, it will not impact our process for the current fiscal year. So, rest assured, when we advertised for openings, there were no openings because the chair and the liaison did, and our staff liaison did get together, and those that were up for reappointment did request reappointment and are being recommended for reappointment. So there are no vacancies at the moment, and so whatever decision the council makes in terms of permanent or two-year will not impact our current process.
So my feeling on it then is, if there's really no change, there's no issue, it's just a reissue of 2 years at this point, I'm kind of in favor of Councilmember Rodman's comments to see how some of these, and we know there were some challenges at first, but it's worked itself out and it's becoming what I would say more positive of a process with the commission working together and I think in the intent of what it was supposed to do. So I think another two-year timeline is a good way to see, okay, maybe this is a commission that really does need to stay and move forward. So I'm really in favor maybe of just the extension of 2 years based on that. Thank you,
Councilmember Pena. I appreciate council's input. I value all of our boards and commissions, and I think Ms. Jacobs spoke well that boards and commissions are advisory to the council, and they are an important component of public participation, public input. They're that third leg of the stool, so to speak. We have the council, we have staff, and we have our boards and commissions. I've certainly benefited from the council's or the commission's review of the budget, review of PSBRS, permanent base adjustment, budget policies, what they're working on currently. And so I think they've certainly added value. And while we have not always followed their recommendations, and that would be true with all the boards and commissions, they certainly have increased our understanding of particular issues. I think there may have been an unintended message here with the two-year extension to the members of the commission themselves, that somehow it differentiates them from the other boards and commissions. And so that's something that with Councilmember Jones-Ivey's motion, I think does address. So with that, I think we've had enough conversation about it. Mr. Standish, would you take a roll?
Mr. Mayor, before you call the vote, may I weigh in on this briefly?
Okay.
Yes. I apologize for interfering with this discussion. I obviously was not aware of this. But I think there might be a better way to address this, and let me walk you through why I think that, and then it's up to you. It'll help all of you understand my thinking if you actually look at the resolution in your packet, which is R20-48. And if you have that in front of you, you will see that very first whereas, where it's talking about the original resolution, 19-01, which reconstituted this previously, I guess, abandoned Budget and Finance Commission. And when you read that in the next whereas clause, you'll see that the reason that this was brought to you in the form that it was brought to you tonight is because the original resolution that reconstituted this commission said it was for 2 years and there was a sunset provision for an additional 2 years. Right or wrong, that's how it was done.
Right.
And so now what we would be doing tonight, if you know your motion was passed, is we're completely changing the original resolution 19-01. And I'm also not sure exactly what this resolution, we're making wholesale changes to this resolution 20-48. And I'm a little uncomfortable passing a resolution of you folks passing a resolution where I don't know the exact language of it. So all that, for those reasons, I think a better way to go as I do this on the fly, I would ask Councilmember Jones-Ivy to consider amending her motion.
Okay.
To be the following. It would be a motion to reject resolution R20-48 and to direct the staff to bring back another resolution for the next meeting by which the original sunset provision for this commission is removed, and the term for the commission would then be indefinite. And I can restate that again if you're writing that down. And again, this is just my recommendation, and I've explained why.
Okay. So essentially, my motion would be to reject R20-48 as it is currently written.
And
so then we would have to vote. We would have to vote that down. Is that right?
So let me just say it one more time. And okay. If you happen to have a piece of paper in front of you,
I am writing.
Okay, I'm sorry, and I might be going.
No problem. Far. Go ahead.
My recommendation for you on this motion would be to amend it so that the motion would be to. You would move to reject resolution R20-48.
Okay.
And to direct the staff.
Gotcha.
To bring back another resolution that makes the commission, makes the life of the Budget and Finance Commission to be indefinite. And if you would make that amended motion, and if Councilmember Nicholson seconds it, that will be on the table. And I think that's just a cleaner way to do this from a technical legal perspective. And I'm so sorry.
No problem. That does sound easier. So it would make the life of the Budget and Finance Commission, and your last word to that was?
Indefinite.
Indefinite. Thank you.
Sure.
Mr. Thank Mayor.
Ms. Mayor Barron.
I'd like to ask Mr. Cohen, is there any way that we can resolve this issue tonight so that we don't have to have this come back to us at a future meeting? Because what you're asking us is asking us to have another vote on this issue at a future meeting when we've already kind of had the discussion. You know, is there any way to more or less move this forward this evening?
I'm sorry, I was on mute. It's if we were just changing a word or two or three or a sentence in this resolution, I'd be happy to do that. But what the motion requires is a wholesale change, completely different resolution. I can't adjust this on the fly. That's why I'm hesitant to do it that way. So I'm not.
Okay. I'm strong.
I understand. I do get that.
Okay. Gary, what if it were to say instead, for an example, the motion were to say something to the effect of renew R19-01 and abolish the sunset provision, creating the Budget and Finance Commission as a standing commission. Because the issue is the R1901 having a sunset provision in it. So we wouldn't be approving R20-48, which talks all about sunset provisions, but instead have a motion that we will abolish the sunset provision and establish the Budget and Finance Commission as a standing commission.
Except the problem from my perspective, and again, I'm not trying to make this more complicated, but the problem is this is supposed to be done by a resolution. So if we're not doing R20-48, we don't have a resolution because I can't recraft one on the fly. That's the problem.
Okay.
I'm so sorry.
I understand.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So do I need to restate that motion?
You do.
Okay. I move that we reject resolution R20-48 and direct staff to bring forth another resolution which makes the life of the Budget and Finance Commission indefinite.
And Councilmember Nicholson, do you accept that?
Yes, I accept that.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Mr. Standish, roll call vote, please.
Vice Mayor Barrett?
Yes.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy?
Yes.
Councilmember Nicholson?
Yes.
Councilmember Pena?
No.
Councilmember Rodman?
No.
Councilmember Solomon?
No.
Mayor Winfield?
Yes.
A motion passes 4-3. We'll go to the
Thank you, everybody. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Gary.
We'll go to the regular agenda now. Mr. Standish, item one.
Public hearing, discussion, and possible action regarding an application for a Series 12 restaurant liquor license for The Landing, located at 8195 North Oracle Road, Suite 105.
We have a staff report.
Yep, Mr. Mayor, members of council. So the clerk's office received an application for the new Series 12 restaurant liquor license from agent Thomas Aguilera for The Landing, located at 8195 North Oracle Road, Suite 105. Mr. Aguilera has submitted all the necessary paperwork to the town and to the Arizona Department of Liquor Licenses and Control and has paid all related fees associated with applying for the license. In accordance with Arizona revised statutes, the application was posted on the premises for 20 days, ending on September 17th, and no protests were received during that time period. The Oro Valley Police Department has completed their standard background check on The Landing and Agent Thomas Aguilera, and the Oro Valley Police Department has no objections to the issuance of the Series 12 license. And with that, staff is recommending approval. I'll be happy to answer any questions, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, at this time, I'd like to open the public hearing for this agenda item one. If there's anyone in the audience that would like to speak to this particular topic, this is your opportunity to do so. Again, you would go to the participants icon, click on that, a list of names will come up. You'll find your name, click on your name, and then click on the hand icon. If you're calling in by phone this evening and you want to speak to this item, you would hit *9. I'll wait a moment. Seeing no hands, I'll close the public hearing. Are there questions for Mr. Standish regarding this item? Not, I'd entertain a motion.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to make a motion.
Thank you.
I move to recommend approval of the issuance of a Series 12 liquor license to the Arizona Department of Liquor License and Control for Thomas Robert Aguilera for the landing located at 8195 North Oracle Road, Suite 105.
I'll second.
Councilmember Solomon seconds. Any discussion? Hearing none, Mr. Standish, would you take a roll call vote, please?
Yes, Mayor Barrett.
Yes.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
Yes.
Councilmember Nicholson.
Yes.
Councilmember Pena.
Yes.
Councilmember Rodman.
Yes.
Councilmember Solomon.
Yes.
Mayor Winfield.
Yes.
Well, the motion recommended approval of the issuance of a Series 12 liquor license to the Arizona Department of Liquor Licenses and Control for Thomas Robert Aguilera for the landing located at 8195 North Oracle Road, Suite 105, passes 7-0. Thank you. Mr. Standish, item 2.
2A, resolution number R20-49, declaring the proposed zoning code amendments to section 22.13 and other associated sections of the Oro Valley Zoning Code in Attachment 1 and filed with the town clerk a public record.
So I'll entertain a motion for item 2A. So I move to approve resolution number R20-49 declaring the proposed code amendment to section 22.13 and other associated sections of the code in attachment 1 and filed with the town clerk a public record.
Second.
Vice Mayor Barrett seconded. Any discussion? Mr. Standish, roll call vote, please.
Ms. Mayor Barrett.
Yes.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
Yes.
Councilmember Nicholson?
Yes.
Councilmember Pena?
Yes.
Councilmember Rodman?
Yes.
Councilmember Solomon? Councilmember Solomon, what was your vote on that one?
Yes.
All right, thank you. Mayor Winfield?
Yes. So item 2A, the motion by Vice Mayor, I apologize, I had made the motion, right? And it was seconded by Vice Mayor Barrett, passes 7-0. Mr. Standish, item 2B.
2B, public hearing, ordinance number O20-08, amendments to section 22.13 and associated sections of the Oro Valley Zoning Code. And
staff report.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and council members.
Good evening.
My name is Melanie Sims, and I'm a principal planner with the town of Oro Valley. Next slide, please. So our purpose this evening is to discuss a proposed code amendment to update the required findings for a variance request. This proposed code amendment is entirely a housekeeping item as a legal exercise to ensure the zoning code best aligns with state law and recent case law. Approval of this code amendment will benefit residents, applicants, staff, and the Board of Adjustment by providing clear and consistent guidance for applying the required findings. The proposed code amendment was discussed in detail with Town Council last month, so I will be keeping my presentation this evening brief, as the discussion last month did not generate any changes. The code amendment was recommended for approval by the Planning and Zoning Commission and is being presented tonight for discussion and possible action. Next slide, please. So just as a quick refresher, variance requests are considered by the Board of Adjustment. Per state law, any property owner may request a variance. This includes owners of both residential and non-residential properties. However, in both situations, the Board of Adjustment must find that all five findings required by state law and the zoning code are met to approve a variance request. Because the Board of Adjustment is quasi-judicial, this means appeals of their decisions are heard by the Superior Court, it is imperative the findings are legally defensible. The proposed code amendment adds language verbatim of state law and incorporates direction from case law, which adds clarity to four of the five findings. Again, there are no changes proposed for the fifth finding, which protects public health, safety, and welfare, as it is already legally defensible as a function of constitutional police power. Next slide, please. So since the proposed code amendment directly affects the Board of Adjustment's duties, staff did meet with the board members to gather their feedback and address any questions or concerns. The feedback was minimal and the board did not have any outstanding questions nor suggest any changes. Again, the Planning and Zoning Commission also considered the code amendment on August 11th. And as a legal effort to gain further alignment with state law, the commission recommended approval. And lastly, staff did discuss the proposed code amendment with town council last month in detail and clarified that the variance process, which per state law is available to all property owners. However, the discussion did not generate any additional changes to the proposed code amendment. Next slide, please. So in summary, the proposed code amendment updates the required findings for variance cases by adding language verbatim of state law and incorporating new direction from case law. The changes are housekeeping items and legally necessary to help residents, applicants, staff, and the Board of Adjustment process and consider variance requests consistently and in conformance with the law. This concludes my presentation. Again, keeping it brief, but I'm happy to answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sims. There is a public hearing associated with this item 2B. So I'll open the public hearing at this time. If there's anyone in the audience that would like to speak to item 2B, this is your opportunity. Again, you'd go to the participants icon, click on that, a list of names will come up, find your name, click on your name, and then click on the hand icon. If you're calling in by phone this evening, star 9. Agenda item 2B. We'll see no hands raised. I'll close the public hearing. Questions by council to Ms. Sims?
Yes, Mr. Mayor, I do have a question.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
I guess one of my ongoing concerns has been with the fact that we are dealing with state law, and I'm wondering if we vote to change this, are we then impinging on state law and setting ourselves up for some legal issues?
Mayor Winfield, Councilmember Jones-Ivy, that's a great question. And actually, this code amendment does the opposite. Our current findings actually create conflict with state law. And so by doing this code amendment, we're in more alignment with state law. And it has been reviewed with our legal department and does not have, does not conflict with state law. It actually betters our alignment.
Okay, so are you saying that state law has changed that will allow us to make the necessary changes?
Sure. Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Jones-Ivy, state law has not changed, but as with many jurisdictions, our findings, the verbiage wasn't as aligned as it could be. But there is a difference where recent case law has provided further direction on how to apply the findings, which we also incorporated as well to make sure we're meeting the intent of state law.
Okay. My other concern is that can a developer take advantage of this?
Mayor Winfield, Councilmember Jones-Ivy, per state law, all property owners can request a variance request, but the Board of Adjustment, for if it's a residential or non-residential property, would have to find that all five findings are met.
Okay, I'm sorry, state that again for me. Your voice kind of dropped off at the end.
Oh, apologize.
No
so
problem.
All property owners, whether it's commercial, residential, can request a variance, but the Board of Adjustment does have to find that all five findings are met in order to approve that request.
So if there's a developer that is building houses. They can take advantage of this.
Mayor Winfold, Councilmember Jones Ivy, if the developer is the property owner or an agent for one, yes.
Okay. Then I'm confused.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It was my understanding that only the end user, which would be the purchaser of the property, would be able to take advantage of this. Is that not correct?
Mayor Winfield Jones Ivy, it's per state law, it's the property owner. So whatever stage they're of ownership of the property.
But it does not clearly define whether it is a developer that's owning the property or a buyer, a homeowner.
Sure, Mayor Winfield, Councilmember Jones Ivy, if I may, ask Mr. Buyer Vella to perhaps clarify.
Hey, Mr. Vella, if you would. I see that.
I think, especially,
we can't understand you.
Understand him.
You're going to have to log out and log back in.
While he's doing that, Mr. Andrews is also on the call. Mr. Andrews, do you have any additional information you could provide us, Councilmember Ivy Jones Ivy with? I think he's on.
Apparently, I'm unable to start my video, but that's all right, I guess. Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Jones Ivy, this is Joe Andrews from the legal department. Variances are something that is actually a creature of state law, and it's actually a right granted to every property owner, period. Doesn't matter who owns it at what point. They can all apply for a variance if they own land.
Okay.
Councilmember Jones Ivy, does that
makes it? I'm unsettled by it, to be honest with you, because I was under the impression that this came to us as a result of a historical home, and the request was for less than a 10% change.
Mr. Mayor and members of council. Ivy, that item is the next item on the agenda.
It's the next one.
Yeah. Correct. And so Mr. Vella will be back on momentarily to further explain. And that may be part of the confusion, is that difference between those two items. So I think as Mr. Andrews and Ms. Sims mentioned, what this is doing is simply better aligning our ordinances with regarding variances. Variances have been allowed, will continue to be allowed, and that is not changing. The way in which people can apply for variances is not going to change.
Mm-hmm.
And so what this does is it provides that alignment so that there is no ambiguity between the town's codes and the state code. On the next item, we'll talk about that slight administrative change. But you are correct, Councilmember Jones Ivy, that it is typically the individual homeowner who asks for a variance. They want to be able to add an extension to their home, and go into and it's something happens or it's a hilly site, and so they're asking for a variance because of unique circumstances, that sort of thing. Can a developer on a large tract ask for a variance? Sure, mm-hmm. But not piece by piece. Like, they can't have a variance apply wholesale across an entire subdivision. So they can't say, we want a variance to see the setback changed from X to Y on every single lot. That's not how the variance process works. And so it is confusing, but I will tell you in my experience that variance granting is few and far between, because meeting those five criteria is extremely difficult and happens infrequently. And I wouldn't see that changing with this modification that's being proposed to the council this evening.
Okay, thanks, Mary.
I would say, if anything, and Ms. Jacobs, you can correct me, or Ms. Sims, if I'm incorrect, if anything, what this does by aligning our code more closely with state code, it actually makes it more difficult for a variance to occur.
So, and I know
whoever's requesting it. So it is that a true statement, Ms. Sims?
Mayor Winfold, I'm not sure if it'd make it more difficult. Depends on, but what this really does is it makes it very clear to everybody what they're trying to achieve with the variance request. Okay. So I think that's
a better state. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Mayor, I still have questions. I want to understand what kind of variances are requested under this particular amendment that we're talking about.
Sure. Mayor Winfield, Councilmember Jones-Ivy, so we aren't requesting any types of variance. The findings apply to all variance cases, and they do range, as Ms. Jacobs stated, from individual homeowners trying to get different modifications to utilize the existing zoning code. But with this proposed code amendment, it is really just updating the findings. The findings are applicable to all variance requests, so we're not looking at any specific type of variance.
Okay, Mr. Andrews and then Mr. Vella.
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Jones-Ivy, there are a couple types of variances that they talk about.
Okay, there's thank you.
Use variances, and there are area variances. You cannot have a use variance. I can't go out and apply for a variance to keep emus in my backyard.
Okay.
That's not allowed. But if I do have a peculiar lot where they have some kind of shape problem, or it has some hills or topography problems, or it's just in an oddball location, what we do is a variance is for the purpose to grant that individual the ability to use their lot like somebody who might have a really nice rectangular lot. If you can't fit the accessory building on your odd lot, but it's allowed in the zoning, you apply for a variance so you can do that. But if somebody has a perfectly square flat lot, they're going to be able to do that without a variance. So it's basically an exercise in equity to allow that individual or that homeowner to use their property the same as everybody else in the same zoning area.
Okay, all right, thank you. That clarifies it for me.
Mr. Vella?
Yes, Mayor. Member Jones-Ivy, can you hear me okay?
I can, yes. Thank you, Byer.
Great, sorry for the difficulty with my audio. So I just want to make two quick points. Number one, this amendment does not advantage any type of applicant whatsoever. It does not give a developer an advantage, does not give a resident an advantage in terms of the ability to receive a variance. So, but it does level the playing field and making sure that the rules are clear.
Okay.
The second point I want to make is that there's nothing about this amendment or change that deviates from state law or enables new types of variances. There are no changes whatsoever that allows new types of variances relative to the existing code. So this really is a housekeeping exercise to clarify what's in code to make sure it marries up to state law, period.
Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate you all explaining that.
Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Mayor. Mr. Mayor. I had asked.
Okay, I didn't realize that. It's sometimes hard to sort through the voices. So, Vice Mayor Barrett, are you fine with Councilmember Solomon? Apparently, he spoke before you.
Sure. Yeah, I just have something really short, but yeah, he can go first.
Councilmember Solomon.
Hi, I'd like to make a motion. There's been some great misunderstanding in this motion. I know we received an email from an individual who misunderstood this motion, and I'm afraid he confused the situation. We went through this in detail in a study session. This was reviewed by the Board of Adjustments, who actually has to hear these variances, and it was also presented to P&Z. This is a very simple bookkeeping matter to put us in conformance with state law.
Therefore, I move to approve ordinance number 20-08, amending the zoning code section 22.13 and other associated sections to further align the variance findings with state law.
Second.
Discussion, Vice Mayor Barrett.
Thank you. I just wanted to back up to our study session last week and ask Mr. Vella. There was one instance where I had asked, can these things be used by a developer or are they just from an individual homeowner? And then first it's just an individual homeowner, and then it was, oh no, it can be by developers as well. So is this that provision that we were talking about in last week's study session?
Mayor, Vice Mayor Barrett. So I think, you know, an issue we're having tonight is a lot of folks are confusing this agenda item jumbling together this agenda item and the very next one.
Yeah, because they both deal with variances, and we talked about them on the same night.
Understood. Good reason. I understand why there's confusion. So this one, as it is today, without a code minimum, this wasn't even on the agenda. Right now, any property owner can ask for a variance per state law. Okay, so the next agenda item is where it is limited to only the end user and not the developer.
Okay, so this was the one where we had asked that question and found that it could be by anyone.
Correct. So okay. Variances are open to all property owners within the town.
Okay, I think there was some confusion carrying over from last week's study session where, you know, trying to piece out that answer into this. So I just wanted to make sure that I was on the same page regarding that. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Any more discussion? Okay, so there's a motion by Councilmember Solomon, seconded by Councilmember Pena. Mr. Standish, can you take a roll call vote, please?
Just to clarify, was that a motion by Councilmember Solomon and a second by Vice Mayor Barrett?
No, it was seconded by Councilmember Pena.
Yeah. Pena? Okay, thank you. All right, Vice Mayor Barrett?
Yes.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy?
Yes.
Councilmember Nicholson?
Yes.
Councilmember Pena?
Yes.
Councilmember Rodman?
Yes.
Councilmember Solomon?
Yes.
And Mayor Winfield?
Yes. The motion passes 7-0. Mr. Standish, regular agenda item 3A.
3A, resolution number R20-50, declaring the proposed zoning code amendments to section 23.5 and other associated sections of the Oro Valley Zoning Code in attachment 1 and filed with the town clerk a public record.
Thank you. I move to approve resolution number R20-50, declaring the proposed code amendment to section 23.5 and other associated sections of the code in attachment 1 and filed with the town clerk a public record.
Second.
Councilmember Pena seconded. Any discussion? Mr. Standish, roll call vote.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
Yes. Sorry, I was on mute.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy?
Yes.
Councilmember Nicholson?
Yes.
Councilmember Pena?
Yes.
Councilmember Rodman?
Yes.
Councilmember Solomon?
Yes.
And Mayor Winfield?
Yes. The motion 3A passes 7-0. Mr. Standish, item 3B.
Public hearing, ordinance number O20-09. Amendments to section 23.5 and associated sections of the Oro Valley Zoning Code.
Thank you. Staff report.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Can you hear me okay tonight?
Yes, we can, Ms. Holden.
All right, great. Thank you. Good evening, Mr. Mayor and council members. My name is Hannah Oden, and I'm a senior planner with the town of Oro Valley. Next slide, please. So the purpose of this presentation is to provide information regarding a proposed zoning code amendment. The proposed code amendment would provide a fair, balanced, and time-tested process for administrative review and potential approval of minor building setback reduction requests without the requirement to go through the legal framework of a variance process. Now, I'll walk us through the proposed code amendment during this presentation. Zoning code amendments require a recommendation by Planning and Zoning Commission with final action by Town Council. Last month, this code amendment was presented to the Council for information and discussion purposes only during a study session. And tonight, the amendment is being presented for discussion and possible action. And the complete proposed code amendment can be found in your packets. Okay, next slide, please. So to start, I'm going to provide some background information before discussing the proposed code amendment in more detail. So all building setback reductions, no matter how minor, must be considered by the Board of Adjustment as a variance case. The Board of Adjustment is a quasi-judicial board which has the power to alter property rights or consider administrative decision appeals within the bounds of the law. A variance is when the Board of Adjustment provides a modification of the provisions of the zoning code when five legalistic findings have been satisfied. This proposed code amendment is an effort to build on the proposed code amendment related to variance criteria that you considered earlier this evening. So often these setback reduction requests are minor with no impact to surrounding properties. However, the five legalistic findings per state law and the zoning code that must be satisfied for all variance requests are intentionally strict and difficult to meet. For this reason, even variance setback reduction requests that are minor with no negative impacts are often denied because those five required legalistic findings have not been met. So a recent case considered by the Board of Adjustment illustrates this situation well, as shown on this slide. An applicant was requesting a setback reduction to construct an attached garage at their home, and the request was for a 2.5-foot setback reduction. Now, even though the request was minor, with no negative impacts, and was supported by neighbors, both staff and the Board of Adjustment found that the request did not meet all required variance findings, and the request was appropriately denied based on the required legalistic findings. Minor setback reduction requests are also something that Oro Valley residents ask town staff about during home construction projects. And while these inquiries often do not result in a variance application, it does illustrate a community need. The proposed code amendment would provide a process for administrative review and potential approval of minor setback reduction requests only, such as the one described. Now, requests would be subject to specific standards, which I will describe later in the presentation. Okay, next slide, please. Thank you. So while developing this proposed zoning code amendment, we turned to other jurisdictions to research. So a number of jurisdictions in Arizona, as shown on this slide, have allowances for administrative review and potential approval of setback reductions in their zoning codes, and were used as the framework for crafting this proposed code amendment. Now, while the process differs between jurisdictions, all have been able to successfully implement a process that allows for administrative review and potential approval of minor setback reductions when warranted and based on specific standards. Now, staff examined the content of these processes for the key components that have been incorporated into this proposed code amendment. Now, while staff conducted research on other jurisdictions, I do want to emphasize that the proposed code amendment has been tailored to Oro Valley. And furthermore, staff referenced state law for this proposed amendment. And state law does allow for setback reductions less than 10% to be eligible for administrative approval. And I'll discuss that a little bit further in the presentation. Okay, next slide, please. So the proposed code amendment has five key components that are shown on this slide. Now, I'll describe these in more detail during the rest of my presentation, but I do want to just briefly touch on them now. So first, the proposed process would only apply to single-family residential properties for individual homeowners and may not be used by major home builders. Second, the setback reduction must be less than 10% as required by state law and no closer than 5 feet to any property line. Third, requests must be unopposed by directly affected property owners. Fourth, all requests would be subject to specific standards to ensure that no negative impacts, or that there are no negative impacts to surrounding properties. And fifth, the existing appeal process in the zoning code for administrative decisions to the Board of Adjustment would be used. Next slide, please. Thank you. So now I'll go through the specifics of the proposed code amendment, and I'll start with the first key component. So this proposed code amendment would apply to single family residences for both the main building and detached accessory structures. So this would include something such as a home addition or a detached garage. Setback reduction requests would be considered individually on a parcel by parcel basis for single family residences. It would not apply to setback reductions for multiple properties as part of an entire subdivision or as part of the final design stage as requested by a major home builder or developer. So in short, this process may not be used for multiple properties as one application and are considered on a case-by-case basis. And the intent really is to help individual homeowners. Now lastly, there are existing sections in the zoning code where setback relief is already granted in the form of an allowed encroachment in certain instances for individual properties. The proposed amendment would not allow for further setback reductions to be granted where the code already provides relief. Okay, next slide, please. So next, I'll discuss the standards that all minor setback reduction requests must meet to be eligible for this process, including neighbor involvement and addressing potential impacts. So setback reductions must be less than 10% and may not result in a setback that is closer than 5 feet to any property line. So as mentioned previously, state law limits administrative approval of setback reductions to less than 10%. The proposed process would apply to all zoning districts that permit single family dwelling units. The table on this slide shows single family zoning districts and illustrates what a 10% reduction would look like for front, side, and rear setbacks. Again, setback reduction requests for administrative review and potential approval must be less than 10% per state law. So any setback reduction would in reality be less than what the table depicts. For instance, in an R1-36 zoning district, which is highlighted in the table, a maximum front setback reduction would result in a less than 3-foot reduction from 30 feet. So the resulting reduced setback would be greater than 27 feet. And the maximum setback reduction that would result from this proposed process would be less than 5 feet in the larger lot zoning districts where the setbacks are greater. And all requests must also be unopposed by directly affected property owners, which means that no written response in opposition is received by town staff within a 15-day comment period when notices are sent out. And lastly, similar to variance findings, setback reduction requests may not be materially detrimental to surrounding properties and are also subject to conditions, which would be determined by the Planning and Zoning Administrator to limit any potential negative impacts. This would include conditions such as screening and exterior color limitations. Now, the purpose of this latitude is to address any unforeseen circumstances. Okay, next slide, please. So lastly, I'll discuss the review and appeal process, which is included in the proposed zoning code amendment. The amendment gives the Planning and Zoning Administrator review and decision authority of setback reduction requests if specific standards are met. They may approve with conditions, or deny an application based on the requirements of this process. Now, similar to other jurisdictions in Arizona who have a setback reduction allowance, any appeals to the Planning and Zoning Administrator decision would be deferred to the Board of Adjustment. And this would follow the current process for appeals of administrative decisions that exists in the zoning code. All administrative decisions may be appealed to the Board of Adjustment by aggrieved parties. And if the request is denied, the applicant still retains their ability to have their case considered by the Board of Adjustment as a variance case, and it would be subject to all variance criteria. Next slide, please. So all proposed code amendments are reviewed for conformance with the general plan. Staff finds that the proposed code amendment is supported by the general plan by providing directly affected property owners opportunity to provide comments and input regarding a proposed setback reduction request. And furthermore, the proposed code amendment is supported by the general plan by ensuring that any proposed transitions resulting from a minor setback reduction request are acceptable to neighbors. The proposed code amendment supports compatibility with existing town development and also does not conflict with any other general plan goal or policy. So the proposed code amendment was presented to the Board of Adjustment during a study session in August. The board was supportive of the proposed amendment and had minor clarification questions. There were no outstanding questions or concerns. And last month, this proposed code amendment was considered by the Planning and Zoning Commission at a public hearing. Overall, the commission was supportive of the proposed amendment, and it was recommended for approval with a condition recommended by staff, just to clarify one part of the proposed code language, which simply served a housekeeping purpose. And this item was also presented to Town Council last month during a study session. And from that discussion, no changes were made to the proposed code amendment. Next slide, please. Thank you. So in summary, the proposed code amendment would provide a process for administrative review and potential approval of minor setback reductions only when they're warranted and based on specific standards. The intent is to provide flexibility in the code for a fair, balanced, and time-tested process when setback reduction requests are minor without the need to go through the extensive legal framework of a variance process. Reductions would be limited to less than 10% and would be subject to strict standards to ensure that there are no negative impacts to surrounding properties. Again, all eligible requests must be unopposed by directly affected property owners. The Planning and Zoning Commission recommended approval of the proposed code amendment at their September meeting, and it is presented to Town Council tonight for discussion and possible action. So this concludes my presentation, and I'm happy to answer any questions about the proposed code amendment. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Oden. There is a public hearing associated with this item 3B of our agenda. I'm opening the public hearing now. For those that would like to speak to this particular topic, this is your opportunity. If you go to the participants, click on that icon, then click on your name. Click on the raise hand icon or star 9 of your phone. Ms. Tracy Alexander, staff, if you would, okay, so you're unmuted. If you would state your name and if you're a resident of Oral Valley, Ms. Alexander.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Good evening. My name is Tracy Alexander, and I'm a resident of Oral Valley. I would like to thank the mayor and councilmen and women for considering this zoning code amendment. I continue to support this proposal for both myself and for other Oral Valley residents for whom this will help with small common sense situations. It's good business to periodically review, adjust, and update codes, laws, and amendments to remain current with the evolving world around us. The U.S. Constitution has been successfully amended 27 times. I don't think anyone could argue those amendments were not necessary and beneficial to the citizens of our country. I'm not comparing these zoning code amendments to the Constitution, rather making a point that change is not always bad and some changes are necessary, beneficial, do no harm, and follow common sense. I understand commissions are in place to give citizens a voice in the town's operations. This amendment, although it does give authority to the town staff, does not take away any authority from any commission because currently there is no commission that has the ability to grant this type of relief. My husband and I believed we had a special circumstance when we made our appeal to the Board of Adjustment for a variance. In fact, we still believe our 1959 guest home is a special circumstance. It's unfortunate the state law does not recognize it as such. This zoning code amendment, which provides small relief under strict conditions with a limited application, allows staff, who are subject matter experts in planning and zoning, to make common sense decisions for citizens while maintaining the integrity of the code and allowing the Board of Adjustment to focus on appeals to be measured against state law criteria. This is not precedent setting in the state of Arizona. As mentioned in the presentation, many jurisdictions in Arizona, including Pima County and Tucson, have recognized the need for this type of small authorization by town staff. It provides for common sense relief of zoning code for which there currently is no space to do so. Again, it does not remove authority from any commission. I'm pleased that the Board of Adjustment Commissioners were unanimously supportive of this proposal, and the Planning and Zoning Commissioners passed their support as well with overwhelming majority. Thanks again for your consideration, and I hope you also see the need and value of this zoning code amendment.
Thank you. If there are any others that would like to speak to this particular topic, as Ms. Alexander has, this is your opportunity. While the public hearing remains open. Seeing no hands, I'll close the public hearing and open it to the council for questions to Ms. Oden. Vice Mayor Barrett?
Can I make a motion, Mr. Mayor? Or
you may, if there's no questions by council.
All right. I move to approve ordinance number 020-09, amending the zoning code section 23.5 and other associated sections for a process for administrative review and potential approval of minor setback reductions.
I second
that.
Councilmember Solomon seconded. Any discussion?
Mr. Mayor?
Councilmember Solomon?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a much needed change. I think that the case that came before regarding the historic property really highlighted the shortfalls and the current restrictions that the state law placed on the Board of Adjustments and granting the variance. However, the same state law allows administrative change of up to 10%, which has been utilized by all the surrounding jurisdictions, which alleviates the difficulties that just occurred. And keep in mind that this is in accordance to state law, allowing up to 10% variance with a large amount of very restrictive conditions, such as all the neighbors needing to be in agreement with it, and that this decision can, made by staff, can actually be appealed to the Board of Adjustments if it happens to be controversial in any manner, which frankly, if it is controversial, it won't meet the requirements of the statute. So this does not take away anything from the boards and commissions. And if anything, gives a lot more flexibility in special cases to the residents of or owners of basically single family homes. So that's why this is, I think I'd like to thank staff for coming up with this, working out a solution to a problem that made itself apparent several months ago, and one that's once again has been done by many other municipalities and jurisdictions under this current state law. And I think this really is a great win-win for everybody. So thank you, staff, and thank you for the residents that have championed this.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
Yeah, I agree with Councilmember Solomon. Having followed this as the planning and zoning liaison as it's made its way through the various boards and commissions, I want to thank Ms. Alexander for her tireless advocacy for these code changes and the effort that she's put in coming before the town on so many multiple occasions. I think that we have existing residents who this code change can help. I think that it will help homeowners in the future. The differences are minor, but they may make a significant difference to an individual from saving them having to go through the Board of Adjustment process. And it's also fairly common sense. So I'm happy to have the opportunity to vote on this tonight. And I hope that the Alexander family can enjoy a resolution to this challenge. Thank you.
Any more discussion?
Or junk.
Hearing none, Mr. Standish, if you take a roll call vote, please.
Vice Mayor Barrett?
Yes.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy?
Yes.
Councilmember Nicholson?
Yes.
Councilmember Pena?
Yes.
Councilmember Rodman?
Yes.
Councilmember Solomon?
Yes.
And Mayor Winfield?
Yes, item 3B is approved 7-0. Thank you, Council. Any future agenda items? I move to adjourn our meeting this evening.
Second.
Second.
Councilmember Solomon seconds. Mr. Standish, roll call vote, please.
Vice Mayor Barrett?
Yes.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy?
I'm sorry, Mr. Standish, yes.
It's okay. Councilmember Nicholson?
Yes.
Councilmember Pena?
Yes.
Councilmember Rodman?
Yes.
Councilmember Solomon?
Yes.
And Mayor Winfield?
Yes.
Good night, everyone. Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Thanks.